You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. The study of butterflies, especially monarchs, gives us both clues and mysteries. UC Davis professor Dr. Art Shapiro has been observing and collecting data on California butterflies for more than 45 years. He's sharing some of that work in another one of his informative free public lectures. It's coming up this Tuesday, September 11th at the Sierra College Nevada County campus, which is in Grass Valley. And Dr. Shapiro is on the phone right now from Davis. I think he actually stepped out of the lab to join us by phone. Hi, Dr. Shapiro.
Good morning.
Glad to have you here. And when we last talked to you, we were still in the midst of a drought in the West, but you had just begun to see a spike upward in the sightings of monarchs. So what's happened since then?
Well, a great deal has happened, and not only involving monarchs. In a nutshell, the drought was very good for the butterfly fauna at low elevations in this part of California. There had been a long-term decline in butterfly populations in this region beginning in 1999. And during the drought, it was reversed. And we saw butterfly populations returning to the levels that had been familiar back in the 70s and 80s. The exception was the things that had actually been lost because we had some regional extinctions during that decline. At the same time, butterfly populations in the mountains were disastrously impacted by the drought. We saw great declines in both diversity and abundance of butterflies at higher elevations. I can go into what we think are the mechanisms responsible for that. Anyway, that was the situation at the end of the drought a couple of years ago when we had that extremely wet winter. And subsequent to that, we have seen those trends reverse exactly, so that at low elevations, we have seen rapid declines in our butterflies, so that we are now more or less back where we were before the drought. And at high elevations, we have had some recovery, but only limited recovery, from the lows we experienced during the drought. Now, as far as monarchs specifically are concerned, monarchs had their best few years in recent times during the drought, particularly the latter part of the drought. And then they began going downhill again last year, and this year so far is the worst monarch year we have ever seen in California.
Oh, my.
And all of that seems very counterintuitive and surprising, but if you want to pursue it, we can do so, and I'll talk about why we think these things have been going on.
I would like to know some of that, and I want to take one factor out, and that is milkweed, because some people believe it has to do with milkweed, but you've told us before in this program, there has not been a decline in milkweed in California. So I imagine you're going to focus me on climate.
Well, as far as milkweed is concerned, I don't have direct personal evidence bearing on the situation in the Midwest. I know what I read and I know what I hear from colleagues who actually work in the Midwest. We can talk about that if you like. Here in California, the situation is exactly the opposite of what you would get from reading op-ed pieces in the Bee or the New York Times. There is no shortage of milkweed here. There is a shortage of monarchs to use the existing milkweed. As it happens, this year has been the biggest milkweed year perhaps since I've been in California. The plants are very robust and healthy, have put on a huge amount of new growth, and there are no monarchs to breed on them. In fact, I have not seen a wild egg or caterpillar of a monarch this entire calendar year at low elevations. Not one.
This is a powerful crisis. What's going on, Dr. Shapiro?
Well, we have a hypothesis. I probably shouldn't put it out publicly until we have more evidence to test it. I will just say that it may be related to agricultural practices as they were impacted by the drought. But at any rate, whatever is happening with California monarchs, it is plain that the drought did not harm them at all and that milkweed is not a critical factor. In terms of the overall butterfly faunas, the resurgence of the butterflies at low elevation during the drought is probably related in part to agricultural practices as impacted by the drought, possibly related to some other climate-related things, although the mechanisms are less than obvious. The most likely factor is that during drought, the soil is largely dry, there's a lack of fog, there's a lack of high humidity at low elevations. Now, during the winter here in the Central Valley, most butterfly species overwinter near or in the upper layers of the soil, right at ground level. And that is, in a wet year, an extremely moist environment, and it's relatively warm because of the cloud cover. In a dry year, there's much less moisture, and the nights tend to be colder because there's good radiational cooling in the absence of low cloud and fog. The overall impact of that seems to be that in warm, wet years, there's a lot of disease caused by bacteria and fungi among overwintering stages at ground level, while in dry years, things are much more favorable for overwinter survival. So we think that's a significant factor. Another thing is that in drought years, flight activity begins earlier in the year, which means that the species has more time to build up its population numbers in successive generations during the summer. So we think those two things interacted to contribute to the increase in butterfly abundance and diversity during the drought. When those conditions were reversed a couple of winters ago, that immediately reversed those impacts, and we see that reflected in the population behavior since.
So with that, you did see changes then in the breeding patterns.
Oh, yeah, definitely so. Now, we've been keeping track of what we call the first flight date, the first date when a species as an adult is observed during the season, going all the way back to 1972 for about 22 species here in the valley. We started out tracking more species, but a few of them went regionally extinct over that period. And we have seen a progressive earlier and earlier tendency in flight, and that was accelerated significantly during the drought. So that means that the butterfly flight season tends to be longer than it used to be. And in most cases, that means there's more time to build up population numbers. But there are exceptions. The exceptions involve species that attempt to have an additional generation in the fall, and it's really too late to do it, with the result that that generation fails, and you have a lot of mortality, and that will knock the populations down.
You're listening to Dr. Art Shapiro. He is a distinguished professor of evolution and ecology and a zoologist in the Ag Experiment Station at UC Davis. He's been teaching since 1971. He's been observing butterflies since almost that long. And on Tuesday, September 11th at 6:30, he's giving a free public lecture at the Sierra College Nevada County campus. His lecture is titled California Butterflies and Climate Change, Lessons from a 45-Year Data Set. The big arc of 45 years then in terms of climate change, I think even your entire presentation won't be a summary to what you must know, but can you condense that even further for me to the very short version of a summary over your 45-plus years?
Well, we have seen a lot of declines in butterfly richness and abundance. At low elevations, they seem to be more related to land use patterns and habitat loss rather than to climate. In the mountains, however, where there has been much less change in habitat abundance and distribution, We see climate as the overriding factor, and we see a progressive movement of species upslope to higher elevations, tracking the warmer temperatures as they move upslope.
So my earlier reaction was very unscientific and partly emotional when I called this a crisis. What would you call the point we're at right now in terms of that broad, multi-decade perspective?
Well, we have very, very few long-term monitoring data sets of anything that we can use to understand biological responses to climate change. That's why a data set like ours is so valuable. There are so few of them. Most of the analyses that have been done involve widely separated data points. Like, there is a famous study being conducted at Berkeley in which they are redoing a mammal survey of the Sierra Nevada 100 years later, going to the exact same places and using the same techniques. But that gives you two data points 100 years apart, and you don't know what happened in between, right?
Right.
What we have is a continuous record for these sites, some of them going all the way back to the early 1970s, and the newest of the sites, the ones that were started latest, we still have more than 25 years of data. So that enables us to use statistical methods to try to get a handle on what in the environment is having the biggest impacts and the critical impacts in population behavior and population abundance. And we can then translate that information into attempts at projecting future impacts of climate change under various scenarios, and that's what we do.
We haven't used the word fire. Is there an impact on the butterfly populations because of the mega fires we've been experiencing?
Well, obviously there is locally. Obviously, butterflies and their early stages and their host plants and their resources are flammable, and they do go up in smoke. On the other hand, I've been getting a lot of inquiries from the general public and from the media about whether butterfly declines and specifically monarch declines are related to the fires, and my answer is almost certainly not. The phenomena that we're observing are too large scale, and they began before the recent mega fires. So we will have to keep track of local situations to see what the consequences of fire are. But in terms of the large scale patterns, the fires are a recent addition to a complex situation.
I think we've posted a photo on our website of a blue and white speckled alpine butterfly. Will you say something about that butterfly and just the alpine butterflies in general?
Well, I don't know what the picture is. I don't recall having seen it. But the alpine situation is perhaps the most critical because the species that are adapted to the highest elevation conditions have nowhere to go as the climate warms. They're already at the highest point on the landscape. And in order to disperse to a higher mountain, they would have to go a tremendous distance through hostile, warm, lowland territory. Okay?
Okay.
So the species that are dependent on very high altitude resources, many of which are leftovers from the Ice Age, they're what we call relics. So they have managed to hang on in the most extreme environments, which is the environment to which they are adapted. They are probably facing extinction, at least local and regional and perhaps global.
Well, Dr. Shapiro, I need more time with you.
You may have it whenever you please.
Okay.
I'm here.
I'm going to take you up on that. For now, I'll let you get back to the lab. But thank you so much for these ongoing conversations. And I think what you've said today is, at the very least, startling. So we'll digest that. We'll post more information on our website. And we'll invite again people to your free talk next Tuesday up in Grass Valley. Thank you, Dr. Shapiro.
Okay, and all of you who are listening, please do come out and be prepared to ask questions.
Okay, thanks again.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
That's Tuesday, September 11th at the Sierra College County Campus in Grass Valley. And again, it will be at 6:30. It is free and open to the public. There's more at capradio.org/insight. This is Insight on Cap Radio. Thank you.